you for being a Bump2 subscriber. You make this podcast possible. One of the things I love about doing Bump is the people I meet. Cynthia is one of those people. I so admire her, and you will too. You can learn more about her backstory in a previous podcast. In this session, we have a far-ranging discussion touching on the trial and error of creating a healing program, the importance of following one's intuition, and the power of following one's passions as a path to better health and wellness, and so much more. I hope you enjoy this conversation with a truly remarkable woman. Putting together a healing program takes a lot of trial and error, though, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's a good point. And you know, it's like what works for one person, as we always say, doesn't necessarily work for another person. And actually, when I started doing Pilates, it was okay, but it wasn't really working that well for me because my body developed as a ballerina's body. So everything's turned out. My bones developed that way. And so I went to a ballet physical therapist who knew Pilates really well. And I worked with two of them, actually. I worked with one probably 20 years later, and we just sort of fine tuned what I was doing. But I do everything as a ballerina, and that's what my body wants, you know, and somebody else's body wants something else, you know? So, it depends, you know. Yeah, it is hard. And I can look at it more as it's fun to figure out what works for us. Like for me, being a vegan did not work. I lost too much weight and I felt like I had to eat all the time. It became a chore, and I love to eat. But then I tried a plant-based diet. That diet makes me so happy. And I've actually gained 5 pounds. I gained that for chemotherapy. I never lost an ounce during chemotherapy. It's so much of this too. Healing is like mind over matter, like just making a decision and knowing that you are not going to let yourself down. I'm really determined. I'm very strong minded. And when I make a decision, like when I said, okay, I'm going to do chemotherapy for 5.5 months and I am not going to lose any of this weight. I didn't lose any weight. And that's pretty amazing because people do lose a lot of weight during chemotherapy.
Oh, they lose weight, they gain weight. It's a brutal experience no matter how you look at it.
Thank you. I've been through so many brutal experiences, and chemotherapy was by far the most brutal experience I've ever been through. And thank goodness I had wonderful people around me helping me because it was through COVID as well.
Yeah, no, I was horrified. I was just horrified at the idea of pouring this poison, you know, with all the warning stickers on it, and they come all gloved up and everything. I've had such difficulty reconciling putting that into my body.
It's really tough. Oh my gosh, yeah, you're right. And then what I found too is the Western doctors would, no matter how low my blood count was, they'd say, go get your infusion. And I learned from integrative medicine that to go lower and slower, have lower and slower dosing. And then actually a nurse kind of saved me once because a lot of people die during chemo, Pat, and they call it complications of cancer. But actually the doctor took a risk and you didn't know. And I had a nurse actually tell me once, she said, I won't give you the medications because your blood count is just too low. And I said, well, why won't you? And she said, because I think you'll die this week. And then she said to John, cause my doctor, I texted my doctor and he said, no, go ahead with it. You're going to be fine. And then John said, well, who makes the final decision? And as a nurse said, answered the doctor, I said, I make the final decision. I will see you next week and we'll see how I feel. So I took a break that week, and that may have saved my life. That, again, that's another example of you have to make your own decision, what's best for you.
You do. And I think that through a lot of the expressive therapies, through meditation, you become much more connected to your intuition, and your intuition serves you well.
Well put. Or I always say, follow your gut. You know, I mean, your gut, it doesn't know everything, but boy, it sure is the wisdom of the gut. There's no wisdom like your gut and what you just feel and what you just know. And that's extremely powerful. It's too bad we're not. I think we should all be kind of following our guts more than anything else. And I think, like you're saying, going into a meditative state, that's where I learn what my gut's trying to say to me more than any other place is when I'm in meditation. And very often I will literally talk to myself and ask me, what do you need? What do you want to do? You know, that's a very powerful place to be. that wisdom.
Yeah, I find having, you have to be still in order to access it. I have to laugh a little bit. I'll share this with all the people who are maniacal achievers out there. I'm not maniacal anymore, but I am oriented toward, I'm more of an achiever than not. But one of the things I've started doing to make sure I get lots of vitamin D is I do 2 meditative sessions a day, and I always do one outside in the sun because it's cooling off now. The sun is warm. It's just a wonderful combination in, you know, to meditate in the sunshine.
Right. We need that vitamin D, and it's just as human beings, we need to be out in the sun.
I get 2 things done.
And that's another thing that I think that, I think that a lot of people who are dealing with illness, we just decide that we're inside and we're in our beds and it doesn't have to be like that. I mean, I just like, I make sure that within 15 minutes of after I get up that I make sure that I'm outside. It's just too important because for so many years I was that, you know, woe is me. And oh my God, you know, I mean, I don't have a life and I didn't get outside and I didn't get dressed for so long. And, even though I was in, excruciating pain, I mean, nonstop, 24/7, even when I dreamed, I was dreaming about the pain for so many years. It just now, boy, I mean, even through COVID, it's like, I make sure I get dressed every day. I mean, that's being out in the sun and being sort of normal and getting dressed and wearing jewelry, things like that make me feel so much better. And I think that goes a long way with my wellness. I think that really helps me. I know it really helps me with my wellness. Yeah. Being normal.
I totally agree. I wake up, I put on, you know, I dress casually, but hopefully attractively. I put on earrings. I put on some makeup and I do that every day. And I did that every day through COVID simply because it was part of self-care for me.
There you go. I love that. And, you know, I saw a friend, while we were in COVID and I was going through chemo. And I remember she said to me as nice as she could, I think it'd be really nice if you got up and you put some makeup on. It's exactly what you're saying. And then I started doing that because I felt like I just didn't have enough energy to do that. But once I did, and then I thought to myself, well, wait a minute, Cynthia, all through chemo, you're swimming, you're exercising, you're working. You can put some makeup on and it's like you're saying, it's self-care. And I just learned, don't put, I couldn't put mascara on because I didn't have, you know, I lost my eyelashes and my eyebrows. But they're back. And I felt so much better when I would put even a little bit of a little bit of blush and a little bit of maybe some eyeliner. And I just felt more like Cynthia, you know, healthy Cynthia. And I think that helped me get through, you know, I mean, I didn't want to take it off at night because I was too tired by nighttime, but that really helped me. And I'm glad that she said that to me. Yeah.
Yeah. And that again goes to discipline. I think setting up some discipline in your daily life, whether it is, you know, pulling yourself together, meditating, walking, swimming, whatever works for you, setting up that discipline and doing it really matters.
Yeah. And I think that, I mean, we're talking about discipline. You really have to be disciplined to live these really healthy lifestyles. And I mean, I know a lot of the audience here, you've dealt with cancer and cancer is a chronic disease. And if you're in remission, of course you need to be taking such great care of yourself. I say your terrain, you know, making sure that your terrain is healthy because it's about avoiding a recurrence, you know? So, we with chronic illness, we have to have the discipline to really take care of ourselves. We can't look at, although people do this, I don't believe that we can look at doctors to save us. Like, let's just eat horribly. Let's not move, you know, let's stress through the roof, whatever. And then if we get sick, we'll go have the surgeries, we'll go do the pills for life, whatever. And you're going to save us and we're going to go right back to those bad lifestyles. That's just a complete lack of discipline. It's such an American thing to do. And I would love to change, you know, change the way we do things in this country. I just think that we rely too much on doctors. And I think that that is a lack of discipline and a lack of taking control and also taking responsibility for our own wellness. We are responsible for our wellness, not the doctors. You know, nobody else is. It's not the doctors, not your friends, not your family, not your minister, not your church. It's us, you know, it's our body. And like I said, we go home and live with the consequences of whatever we say yes to, you know, and, or whatever we say no to. So we have to have the discipline to to make those decisions, to learn about whatever our diagnoses are, and to go in and make the best decisions for us, and to know that we can stand up to the doctors. My integrative doctor said, in my entire 25 year as a doctor, you're the first patient who's taking control of your cancer care. And then he was saying, and you're doing great. I was doing better than everybody else. And that blew me away that really in 25 years, nobody else has taken control of their cancer care. That was an amazing statement that I heard. It says a lot about America.
That is pretty incredible.
Yeah, it says a lot. Yeah, it says a lot about our values.
It does.
It's like we don't trust ourselves.
Well, you know, it's interesting. You talk about going towards a vegetarian diet or a vegetarian diet. I also tried vegan for a while, but I realized life without cheese was not worth living.
Well, there
living.
You go. I agree.
For me.
Yeah, I agree.
But I go towards a very vegetable-rich diet, little fish and things like that. And, you know, it's interesting. If you can have an open mind, you can walk into a market like a Whole Foods or something, and you go to the vegetable, you know, aisle, and it's so colorful. There's so many different options. It's much more intriguing, actually, than the meat counter.
Wow. That's so interesting. Yeah, I just hate meat. And meat feeds cancer, and people need to know that. But, yeah, vegetables are, I mean, just what tastes better? I mean, once you eat a plant-based diet, you'll never go back. I mean, you lose your taste for meat. I never thought I'd say that, but I will be having salmon tonight. I mean, I have so much salmon. I love that. So many rice and beans, so many mushrooms and berries and nuts. And it's just rice. It tastes so good. and if I don't get vegetables at night, I have oatmeal in the morning with lots of good stuff put on it. And I do love bread. I love it. But I just don't overdo. And I have dessert, you know, and actually I'm a big eater. People think I'm slender, and they always say, oh, you must eat like a bird. And it's like, no, I really love to eat. And I think probably if you eat healthy foods, you can maybe eat more. I don't know. You know, but it just tastes so good to eat healthy. It's what's natural. I mean, if you read about diet, we don't even, as human beings, we don't even have teeth that should be eating meat. It's really bad for us. It should just be a garnish, you know? So, I mean, every now and then I'll have a little tiny bit, I had some shrimp with my mom and it had some ham sauce on it. And that was okay. I didn't feel that good that night, but that way, I mean, it's okay as a garnish, but I mean, we really shouldn't be eating meat I see people eating meat 3 times a day, you know? So that's disappointing.
No, I remember one year I had an amazing organic garden one year, and I had planted a number of things. I planted some Swiss chard. I had no idea what it was or what I was going to do with it. And of course I got a bumper crop. I mean, I had so much Swiss chard, and it turned out to be the best thing ever. I loved it. And I never would have really tried it had I not just accidentally grown way too much.
I was raised on like Swiss chard, things like that. I love it. And John has a community garden where he grows most of our vegetables. And it's just, I mean, when he brings that home, it's like Christmas, you know, I mean, it's just, and he does that about every other day. And it's so wonderful. I mean, absolutely fresh, you know, vegetables and it's just, and he's such a good cook. He does all the cooking. I'm so lucky. I do the cleaning and it's just nothing tastes better. And still you can have a dessert. Just don't have, you know, 5 desserts, have a dessert. I enjoy sweets. I mean, nothing better than someone just gave me a box of See's candy. Ooh, it's so delicious. You know, I mean, we need to enjoy life. And I think in America, people kind of put together taking care of your body as a bad thing, a thing that feels bad. And taking care of my body feels great, you know, feels fantastic, you know? So, yeah, that's what I think. A lot of people just aren't plugged into that. They don't know that it feels really great, which is a shame.
It is. And I think too, you have to be willing to change over time. Your needs will change just like in every other part of your life.
Good point.
And as soon as you get it all tuned, it'll all change. Get over it. That's just the way life is. And you just have to be willing to kind of roll with those changes.
Right. Well, you sure know how to do that, Pat. What do they say? The only thing you can really count on is change. I mean, they say income taxes, but I would say change for sure. And I think to be able to That's a really interesting issue topic, because it's so hard for people to accept change. And yet that's what is normal. I mean, if we don't have change, we don't have life, you know? So I think that's a discipline too, to be able to accept change and to go with it. I think you were saying roll with it. Yeah. To be able to roll with it and be good with it.
You know, I interviewed Eric Weinmayer, who went blind when he was about 16. And he's climbed Everest, the Seven Summits, kayaked down the Colorado River Rapids. And he had such an I say this a lot, but he had such an interesting take on people and change. And what he says is there are three types of people in the world, three categories. And these categories are fluid. You can move between them, okay? But there are quitters. There are campers who just want the status quo. They never want anything to change. And then there's a very small percentage of people who are climbers. Now, climbers get to be campers because you can't be a climber 24/7. But the point is, the very small percentage of people that are climbers are comfortable with uncertainty.
I love that. I mean, uncertainty is so exciting. I mean, with my career, people used to say, but aren't you scared that you're not going to get another job, or what's your next job? It's like, no, that's the excitement of it, is I don't know what it's going to be. I don't know the next one that I'm going to get, you know? And I don't know. I think being a camper some of the time is good, because we don't always want to be achieving or we don't always want everything to be a surprise, right? But without the surprises, kind of where is the joy in life? You know, that's the good stuff, I think.
Well, where's the growth in life? You know, you don't grow unless you're willing to take some risk.
I mean, and risk is so important, right? You know, I mean, you know, risk.
I think it's critical. I think the more we can live in that realm, another friend of mine calls it the void. But the more we can live in that void, if you will, of chance and circumstance and opportunity, the more interesting things come our way. And if you close off to that, your life becomes stagnant.
Oh, really well put. And I wrote down, I've got these notes, I wrote down opportunity, and you just said that. Yeah, I agree. We have to be open to chance, and we keep growing with it. If we're not open, everything is just stagnant, and then we try so hard to keep everything stagnant, you know, and then we just get trapped in that stagnation, which is another word for cancer, you know? We have to keep moving. And as you said, growing. And I think that comes with risk, you know, I mean, risk that makes sense, right?
Oh, sure. Well, I've done some things that didn't make sense, but let's just say risk that makes sense.
I was going to say, with your friend that you interviewed, why on earth did you interview him? I mean, it was a joke, you know, like, wow, what an amazing man. I love that.
I'm fascinated by people's stories and how they manage to pivot from one life to another, and usually their new life, while it is very different, is so rich and powerful and meaningful. It's a remarkable transformation. It is difficult. It doesn't happen quickly or overnight. But, you know, my hope is that these stories touch people so they think, how could I pivot my life so that it would be a richer, better life for me, for my family, for my community?
Right. And I think that these stories inspire people. And I think that everybody does want to take chances, and I think everybody does want to have discipline, and they do want to take care of themselves. I think that maybe they need the right inspiration. Excuse me, easy for me to say, to be able to have that transformation. And as you said, transformation, especially with great illness, it doesn't come easily. These are really hard lessons learned. I mean, for me, I was so angry for such a long time. And I used to think about suicide. And I mean, if I couldn't live the life I had, and, you know, I mean, why would I want to go on? It just hurt too much. And I couldn't see any way of getting out of the hell of my pain that never ended. And the doctors saying I was crazy, and it was all in my head. I was making it up, and I was looking for attention, and everything was upside down and crazy. But slowly I just started actually seeing the doctors as crazy because the things that they were saying to me, like my right arm's in a really severe contracture. And I was told you're folding your arm up with your mind just the way one levitates oneself, or yet you should shoot yourself in the head to get rid of the pain. And I started thinking, these people are actually, the things they're saying to me are crazy. This is like my future. I was just saying, I gotta do something to change this, you know? And I think really, I mean, to me, my life now, it's so different from, well, it's so different, but in a way it's so much the same, except that, you know, I don't get to do everything I want to do, which is unfortunate, you know, which is sad. Unfortunate, I guess I'll go with that word, but I get to do so many things that I would never have been able to do that are so much harder than if I just lived a life in show business. I mean, my life is so much harder, and I think I'm more proud than I ever could have been if I had had the easier life. You know, I mean, I remember telling my mom when I was like 16, all I ever want to do is perform. And I remember saying, but I'm never going to help people. And that really bothered me.
That's interesting. I think a lot of people find their salvation, for lack of a better word, through finding purpose and giving back. You certainly have in many ways. And that seems to be a common theme. I'm working on a book actually right now for Bump, where I'm pulling out these common themes from all these discussions. And it's fascinating to see the themes that emerge across all these
I'll
stories.
I'll bet you are. I'll be interested to read that book, Pat. For me, it's like, meaning, my life is about meaning. People say, you know, are you looking, what makes you happy, or how, or, I don't know what they say, but they talk about happiness to me. And I decided about 5 years ago, I'm not going to look for happiness anymore. I'm going to look for meaning. And I've discovered that in finding the meaning, I find the joy and I find the happiness that way. But I really go to the meaning, you know, that's more important to me than being happy. But it doesn't mean that I'm not happy. It's just, I just have a richer life because of the meaning.
No, I think meaning is one of the themes that comes up. Finding a cause greater than yourself, something outside of yourself, really is motivating and satisfying.
Yeah. And also life is really hard, especially when you're very ill. And when you do realize that you're part of something that's bigger than yourself. And I remember when that hit me and I was in the Sierras where I would have been last week, but it's burning down up in Kings Canyon. I just realized that I am a part of this amazing, wow, I'm a part of this beauty. It was such an aha, you know, epiphany moment for me. And I realized that I was a part of something much bigger. And that really helped me to move on with my life in a positive way. It really humbled me, you know, this is more important than singing and dancing. You know, this is nature. This is Mother Nature. This is the world. This is the earth, you know, and I got to take care of it. And I want to be proud of the part that I take care of and the part that I am in it, that I'm playing a role in that beautiful nature. If that makes sense. It makes sense to me somehow.
Yeah. No, I think a connection to nature is another one of those themes that comes up. And I think it's incredibly important because, just as you said, it gives you a sense of humility and also healing. I think the sense of humility is really important, actually.
Yeah, I think that so many of us can get too high on ourselves and be really affected. And I guess we used to say that with show business, you know, yeah, she's really affected. And but if we can find our humility, you're just humbled. I feel humbled to be able to help people. When people say that I help them, I'm so humbled. I almost get embarrassed. I mean, it's very rewarding, but at the same time, it's like, I don't really know how to take that. You know, I think you're right. Humility is extremely important. As far as healing too, I think we have to find our humility. We have to know that, hey, things go wrong. We don't have the ultimate say, right? I mean, we don't get to decide whether we're sick or not, or tall or short, or, you know, I mean, we don't get to make a lot of the final decisions, which is really interesting because you have to give up a lot of your power, right?
But we don't heal through ego.
Really well put. I'm going to remember that. We don't heal through ego. Very well said. I agree completely. Ah, I love that. Don't heal through ego. That's great.
So do you have a second book planned or coming along?
I do. But it keeps kind of changing for me. A lot of people said I should write a book about how I went through cancer and how I did it did it my way. And that's going to be a part of it. I'm also really very, as I mentioned, very involved with trauma and how that led to my illness, and now how I can make, how I can heal a lot of the damage that was done to my body through trauma, and how that really, that, I thought my life was molded by pain, but my life was molded by trauma. And so it's going to be I'm going to do a book that it's going to, it's sort of going to be the next after Battle for Grace, the next book. It's going to be called Holding Grace. I know the title, I don't know the subtitle yet, but it's going to be about trauma. I want to talk about overtreatment, but trauma and cancer. So it's sort of in my mind, but I haven't decided yet exactly, but I think it's going to be mostly about trauma. People don't really understand trauma. People with pain tend to not like the word. They don't want to hear that trauma caused their pain. I'm doing something called EMDR. It's eye movement desensitization and reprocessing for trauma release. I'm doing therapy for it. I'm doing a lot of other things. I'm going to start some other therapies, and I'm getting so much more well. And I've actually learned that in a dysfunctional family, which unfortunately I come from a dysfunctional family, and I'm having more empathy for everybody in my family, because we all come from a dysfunctional family. But somebody is chosen very early. It's the strongest person is chosen as sort of the golden child on one side of the coin, and also the scapegoat. And that was me. And fixing that family was my job. And you can't do it. It's a job that you're, everyone's bound to fail at. And eventually your body breaks down, and there are a lot of suicides for the person that I was chosen to be, the part that I play in the family. And ultimately I got ill because it's my body's way of finally, just kind of collapsing and saying, I can't do it anymore. I'm going to die. And also I've learned as these repressed memories come back that, I got ill. It was actually all the pain, my illness was a way of protecting myself, as a protective mechanism to not see what was too overwhelming, what would have annihilated me. And it's when you start getting into trauma, I mean, that this is just like, I don't feel like it's a piece of the puzzle. This is the puzzle. This is the entire puzzle. This is what causes, I would say, probably 95% of illness is trauma. And a lot of people are adverse to hearing that or learning that. They'll literally, people with pain will go on and on about all the trauma they've been through, and they say, but that had nothing to do with me becoming ill. And I've learned that it's really hard to tell that person that, well, actually, you did have trauma. I mean, the trauma did cause your illness. For some reason, people have shame around it. There's a stigma around trauma, and I really want to change that. And I want to be a voice in trauma, because it's huge now. I mean, motion pictures are being made about trauma now. I mean, that's sort of the buzzword. When I turn NPR on, more times than not, they're talking about trauma, and it's really exciting. But what are we going to do with it? I mean, there's so many ways to help people and even prevent them from getting sick, and that's really exciting to me. So the book will be a lot about trauma. Yeah, sort of a follow-up to Battle for Grace. How do I hold on to it? Now that I found it.
I look forward to that book. Your first book was terrific. And I always enjoy the insights you have into these topics, but they're hard-earned because you've lived it. You've lived it, and you've had to figure it out.
I have. And singing was something really important to me, too. I know we were going to talk about Crazy, the CD, and that's sort of a... It's what I do. It's the second CD I've recorded at For Grace, and I do it to inspire people to know that they can do whatever they think they can't do. And I also want to inspire them to live their passions and to know that it will heal them. And I titled it Crazy and dedicated it to women in pain who know they're not, because we all deal with that. And that's been a fun project. And like you said, a lot of discipline, a lot of work put in it, but everyone can listen to it free by going to forgrace.org. You can download it. And they're fun songs. They were my favorite songs growing up, and they speak very differently to me now. And I actually just finished it just before going into chemotherapy. And I was hoping, praying to God that I would, praying to something bigger than myself, Pat, that I would survive and I would be able to do the cover. And I did a really crazy cover, so I was bald.
Oh, the cover's great.
It was so crazy because I was staying at a friend's house. And she was giving this to me as a gift. It was her condo actually on the Malibu, right on the beach. And I thought, well, let's see, I barely have any hair. I want to be a mermaid. And we had about 20 minutes at sunset to catch me with like this beaded sort of flapper headdress on and as a mermaid. And I was so happy because I was on the beach for the first time in about 35 years. And I was really, really happy and we got it. And then I thought, but I want to be leaning on what I'm frightened of. And I'm very frightened of sharks and it's a very big shark. And I decided, but I want to give the message to everyone dealing with pain and illness that, you know, we can lean on our fears. We can actually have them bolster us to look toward a bright future. And I wore sunglasses partly because I couldn't get makeup done because of COVID, but also partly because I wanted my future to be just that bright that I had to wear sunglasses. My future's so bright, I had to wear sunglasses. So we've been through so much, everybody listening to this great show. I mean, we've been through so much. What can we possibly be afraid of now? Come on, let's let our fears bolster.
I'm not afraid of much. Are you?
No, it's hard to scare
me. Really?
It's really hard. No, it's a really good point. I mean, kind of where did fear go? Is that interesting? I haven't thought to.
That's a very interesting
topic. For next time, because I love it. I love that.
Well, I'll make a note of that. Where did the fear go?
In all this healing, right? You lose fear.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I look at somebody, I'll go back to Eric again, who climbs these, you know, the seven highest mountains on every, the seven highest mountains
so
in the world
crazy.
On each continent and other things. Certainly he had fear. And like, I don't know if I read or if he said it, he would lay out ladders suspended over the ground so he could practice walking across the crevasses for Everest. And he would just practice and practice and practice. And this goes to so many things that we were talking
about.
The discipline,
passion.
The work. Yeah, absolutely. Having good people around you. And all those things come together and it really diminishes the fear if it doesn't remove it completely. May not remove it completely, but it diminishes the fear because you're prepared.
Exactly. And that's sort of like, I mean, if we have pain, it's good that we're able to feel pain, but then so we pull our hand away from a hot, you know, stove. But when it becomes, you know, it's centralized and you're always having pain, it's not so wonderful. But I'm thinking it's sort of the same with fear. We need to have fear so we don't, you know, jump too high off of something too high. But at the same time, we can't let fear run our lives. We have to take chances. And what you're saying about Eric makes so much sense. I mean, we need to be disciplined, to be prepared for whatever we're going to do. But I say, if it's your passion, oh my gosh. I mean, I used to always say, I hadn't thought about this in a while. Anything worth doing makes you want to throw up at first. I mean, it's like being on stage. I mean, you have to get stage fright, you know? And I've always said, I love to put my head in the tiger's mouth. I used to be in an illusion act like in Las Vegas and we had a big tiger and we had small ones too, but they were very dangerous. But I always used that, but I loved that act. You know, I love doing that show and traveling around. And I love that idea of putting my head in the tiger's mouth. I almost did that with the CD. I was almost put my head in a lion's mouth. We considered that because I love doing that. I mean, it's sort of an adrenaline rush, I think. It's exciting to live something that is fearful, but it's taking a chance. And ultimately, it's your passion. It's something that you love. It just makes you scared at first.
Well, it does. And ultimately, the more prepared you are, the less scary it is most of the time.
Yeah,
not
you're
all
right.
The time.
Well put. I mean, I think the number one fear is public speaking. But I mean, if you do enough of it and you're prepared, it's really okay. I actually love to do public speaking. But when I first started it, I would shake. And I remember my palms would get sweaty or, you know, I had those, you know, sort of the symptoms but then I did it. And then once I started, then it felt great. You know, I get anticipatory anxiety still about things, but once I start, I feel really great. And then it's like, I'm in my happy place. I am completely joy filled. And that sounds like that's what Eric is doing. And when he's climbing, it sounds like he's totally living his passion, living in the moment, you know, just like acting. It's very similar. I definitely approve of his expressive therapy to climb these gigantic mountains. It's not something I'm going to do, you know, but wow, what a great story.
Yeah, and actually, he went on after he climbed Everest. One of his guides said to him, "Don't let this be the greatest thing you ever do." And he thought, "Man, I just climbed Everest. Give me a break." But it was really, really good advice, because you don't want to then become a camper where you have all these accolades on the wall behind your desk and you're not doing anything. So he went on to form a group called No Barriers, and it's oriented towards the disability community. And they do a lot of things rather like Outward Bound, where you're really testing yourself against
nature.
I love
that, because when I said I'm not going to climb Mount Everest, or I was actually thinking I have too much pain, but who knows, maybe with No Barriers, I could do that. You know, I mean, I don't know. I had an Arabian horse, and I love horses, and I just don't know how I could ever get on a horse. That's my big goal. I really want to get on a horse again. I miss them. And when I'm with them, I'm thinking, there's gotta be a way, you know, and I know they're using horses for a lot of therapy for disabled people. And I would really, I want to do that first and then look at Mount Everest and think about it and talk with Eric. No, but that sounds like a great nonprofit, and he's really helping people. I mean, that's fantastic. And there are nonprofits.
Yeah,
it's really
impressive.
There was a nonprofit here in Los Angeles called Media Access, and they were really great. And I was a part of that, and it's getting disabled people work in Hollywood. And it's, you know, Hollywood, we learned, didn't want to hire disabled people because they don't think that we're dependable. You know, ha ha ha. We've really been tested, and I'd say we're the most dependable performers. But that was another great group, and unfortunately, due to funding, they were cut off. And we need more of these nonprofits, you know, to stay well and to stay funded. And we should, you know, if we have the money, we should donate to these nonprofits to help them keep going and help us be able to face our fears and to keep learning and really do great things. So I love that.
Thank you for joining us today. I hope you found something in today's podcast that inspires you along your own life's path, because sometimes a bump in the road is actually a portal into a more conscious and meaningful life. You can subscribe to our free podcast at www.bumpintheroad.us or become a premium member to hear the full conversation. Just go to www.bumpintheroad.us for more information and to sign up.